Spiritually speaking, Orowul cannot see the palace, for she does not have eyes to see it. She blinds herself to spiritual truths that, if accepted and hence seen, would disrupt all the fox had taught her about the rational laws of nature. Orwell is basically a naturalist. She either doesn't believe in the supernatural, but she also does, but she believes the gods are cruel. It's kind of a mixture of the two. And that is what the fox has taught her in his Stoic religion. Well, if she were to actually see the palace, she would have to throw out everything she's ever believed, and that's not easy to do. That's, of course, what Lewis asks us to do with our modernist assumptions, but Orwell is not prepared to do that, and so she refuses to see it and therefore doesn't see it. Earlier, before the great offering of Psyche, when Psyche is in prison awaiting the great offering, Orwell visits her to comfort her, but Psyche is happy. Psyche tells Orwell, "Oh, sister, I'm so happy. All of my life I have dreamed that I would someday be the bride of the beast who lives on the gray mountains." Of course, when Psyche says that, Orwell basically closes her ears and refuses to hear it. She just thinks Psyche's mad or just upset, and she refuses to accept it. And when Psyche tells her later that she's happy, she still refuses to accept it. But there's something worse. The worst part is that after her talk with Psyche on the mountain, when Orwell goes back, she is actually vouchsafed a vision of the palace. The gods allow her to see the palace through the mist at night. Well, she sees it, but she doesn't really see it. She refuses to see it. You see, as Lewis the Apologist so well knew, seeing is often not believing. If our assumptions deny the possibility of a miracle, we will reject it even if it happens right in front of our face. Like the damned souls in The Great Divorce, Lecture 5, Orwell rejects again and again the only thing that can bring her joy. She prefers her enlightened misery to the greater spiritual truth that would upset her beliefs. That's the spiritual level. Now let's look at the psychological level. On that level, Lewis's re-mythologizing is just as effective, for it allows Orwell to justify her destruction of Psyche's happiness in terms of love. In other words, Orwell believes she's doing this for Psyche's own good. She believes it's her affection for the child that is allowing her to do this. It can't be envy, it can't be any other reason. But you know what? Even in Lewis's version, it is finally not true love, it is not agape or caritas that motivates Orwell. Rather, it is a twisted, idolatrous form of affection that smothers rather than edifies, manipulates rather than gives, binds rather than sets free. Again, she says she's doing it for love, but I say it again. She's turned her love into an idol, and that love has become manipulative instead of self-giving. Now, see, if it was simple envy, we wouldn't see it. But because Orwell can fool herself into believing it's love, we've got that deeper psychological level. I mean, Orwell would rather see Psyche unhappy with her than happy with another. Indeed, she is prepared to kill Orwell rather than leave her to the beast. She's like that mother in The Great Divorce that's ready to drag her son down to hell so she can take better care of him than God would. Again, it's embodied in the fiction here, and it's more powerful. But it's more than that. In the same way that Orwell perverts affection love, she also perverts the other two natural loves, which are friendship and eros. First, friendship. Orwell claims friendship with the fox, who's a sort of father figure to her. But later in the novel, when the fox is given a chance to go free, which is what he really seeks, his freedom, Orwell manipulates him into staying. She doesn't say you can't go, but she uses love as a manipulation to keep the fox tied to her side. And so the fox loses what he really desires. It's not really friendship, it's envy. What about Eros? Orwell feels Eros towards Bardia. Bardia is the chief of the guards in Gloam, and she feels Eros. Now, it's not reciprocated, and she never tells Bardia that she feels this erotic love. Bardia has his own wife. But because of her jealousy that's tied to her eros, she's always thinking up unnecessary tasks for Bardia so he won't be able to go home and sleep with his wife. So she, what she does literally is work him to death because she doesn't want him to go back to his wife.